Hello and welcome to Shamanic Works. I'm Laurie, and with me today I have storyteller Alexandra Simpson, and we are sitting here in her lounge recording this in advance with the fire burning and the storm blowing outside in the medieval village of Dunster. And I'm telling you that just so you sort of have a sense of the ambiance. We're closeted here inside a cozy place, and you're welcome here with us. And I hope that some of that leaks over into where you are so that you have an enjoyment of it as well. We'll talk in a minute about why Alex is here. But before we do that, as always, we will open sacred space. So if you have done this before, you'll know how it goes. But if you haven't, then if you will find east for yourself, and that's the direction that the sun rises, just in case you had a moment of panic and forgot where it was. If you're inside of a building, you may or may not know where that is. And if you don't, that's fine. Just pick a direction, and then that is sacred east for you. And then if you will, if you can, face east. And if you are in a situation where you can't actually do that, just send your attention to the east. And then we will be invoking the spirits that inhabit that direction and that communicate the powers of that direction. And then we'll move on to the other direction. So here we go. Spirits of the East, you who throw open the gates of the dawn and invite us to welcome the new day, you who are the nurturers, the midwives, and the defenders of new beginnings, of that which is tender and wobbly and weak within us, teach us to nurture and midwife and defend that in us. Lean into us. Join us in this conversation. Make your wisdom known. And then if you will turn a quarter turn, to your right, you will end up facing south, whether that's actual south or magical south. It doesn't make a bit of difference. And here we are. Spirits of the South, you who embody the fullness of high summer and of the peak of noon and the blazing sun and growth and richness and coming to fruition. Teach us to recognize that in ourselves and in our environments, to embrace it, and to know that it is only a piece of what we are experiencing. So as we turn through the South, teach us to turn through richness and fullness, and to move on. So join us in this conversation. Lean into us and to make your wisdom known. Now, if you will turn a quarter turn to your right, you will be facing west. Spirits of the West, you who teach us to travel light, to have no enemies in this life or in any other, to have no need of enemies, and to release that which holds us back and weighs us down, so that we may dance across the rainbow bridge and bring back whatever it is that is needed for balance, for harmony, and for beauty. Join us in this conversation. Lean into us. Make your wisdom. Now, if you will turn another quarter turn, you will be facing north. Spirits of the North, ancestors, you who have made the epic journey beyond death and have returned to stand at our side, to have your hands on our shoulders and on our heads, to bless us, to teach us, to guide us, to hold us steady to our own path. Be present with us here. Lean into us in this conversation. Make your wisdom known. And if you're in a place where you can look up or reach upwards, do that. And if not, just send your attention upwards. Spirits of above, Papa Sun, Grandmother Moon, star nations, our ultimate ancestors, of whose dust we and this planet and all things that are matter in this universe are formed. Overarch us, as always. Shine your light upon us, allow us to see the path before us, and to place our feet in exactly the right place. Join us in this conversation. Lean into us. Make your wisdom known. And then if you're in a place where you can, if you'll place your hand on the floor or on the earth, if you're lucky enough to be outside, and we will open sacred space finally. Earth, my mother. Earth, my mother. Earth, my mother. You cradle us, as always, and we rest in your embrace. Teach us to dance with joy upon your belly, to walk with grace upon your skin, and to live in harmony and in beauty with everyone of your children, our relations. So may it be. And we have our resident, very good dog person guarding us and putting in his 2 cents worth. So we're glad he's here. So one of the things I really do want to cover in this series of radio programs is we've sort of split off a lot of the roles that the traditional shaman in indigenous societies plays. And one of them is oracle, speaking for spirit, and one of them is herbalist, you know, basically working in partnership with plants to bring health and balance and harmony to every member of their community, not only the human members, but every member of their community. And another one is to bring people into story, to tell stories, and in the Celtic tradition, we call that a bard. So, you know, we think of them as singers, but in actual fact, much of what they were singing was long songs that told stories and that drew people in, and that helped them to remember the story, was having a tune to sing it to, at least it would me. So that aspect of shamanic work is what we're going to talk about today, because Alex is a storyteller, and she is here with us, and she tells stories to all kinds of audiences. So I'm going to first of all turn over to Alex and get her to tell me, how did she end up in the spot where she's a storyteller? Well, that's not a quote-unquote normal career path for someone to follow. It's not something probably, I guess, you thought when you were 12, yes, that's what I'll do. There's lots of examples out there. I'll follow that path.
Hi, Laurie. How did I come to be a storyteller? I love stories. I mean, who doesn't love stories from childhood? I didn't have a tradition of storytelling. I didn't have a grandparent who necessarily told me stories or anything like that. But I really loved the old stories, the myths and the legends. And I got quite absorbed in the classical Greek tradition of storytelling when I was a child. And then school and university and life happened, and I'd left university, I'd begun teaching, working with primary school children. And I was using quite a lot of theatre in my work when someone said, you know, well, what about doing a further training for teaching? There's a new course taking place in Central School in London. And so I got a prospectus, but it's one of those things when you open the prospectus and it doesn't open on the page that you're looking for, it opens on a completely different page. And the page was something called the Sesame Method. And the Sesame Method is a very specific form of drama, movement, sound, story, and even touch, actually, as well, therapy. And it's based in the Jungian tradition of psychology. And that's, I saw in the synopsis of the course how important story and myth are in our lives. And there was such a strong resonance and such a strong pull that I didn't even look at the other course that I'd got the prospectus for. This was what I was going to do. And that's how it began. So I went back to school. It was a full year of training. And I've been working with story pretty much ever since.
I love when that happens, when the universe just hands you something completely unexpected that is exactly right. You know, it's just one of those things that we don't regard that in this culture. We're taught to disregard those events, and yet people experience them all the time. And they have that almost numinous feel about them, you know, where they're just full of meaning. You know, I don't know what the meaning is necessarily, but it's full of meaning. So I'm very glad that you've shared that with us, because that's clearly a calling.
I call it following the breadcrumbs. Yes. And it's happened again recently with the gongs. But, you know, in terms of story, and I didn't become a storyteller in that moment or even on that course, but the story element of the training was where my passion was. And how we worked with story at the time, looking at different shamanic traditions as well, and how story was used and the power and the healing of story. We just would tell the story in its barest of bones and then allow the listener and the group, because it was mainly for groups, this type of work, to breathe life into the story through play, through drama, through movement, through sound. So we weren't really storytellers. And then the years passed, as they do, and I moved to Somerset and looked to set up my own practice, which didn't really happen. So I took my understanding of mental health, particularly, into the mental health field and worked in that. And in the meantime, ran various Sesame workshops within the community. But it wasn't actually until, again, sort of another of those turning points in life where a door closes. I was made redundant. It was back in when the Northern Rock crisis collapsed, and a lot of Somerset Council's money was all wrapped up in Iceland, I think, at the time. And we had 2 or 3 weeks' notice, and the service I was working for, the charity, closed down. And my mother had passed within the last 18 months. And whilst there was a blind panic that wanted to surface and take over my life in terms of what was I going to do and what work was I going to find, I just saw it as an opportunity to, in Gestalt training they call it, entering the void.
Yes.
And I just thought, okay, there's an opportunity here to enter the space and to see what emerges. So there was a real sense of just having to resist all the compulsions to drive me forwards and look for the next job or the next piece of work. And I did go for a couple of interviews, but always thought, why am I here? Just enter this space. So I really did a lot of personal work at the time, exploring my own journey through my own grieving process. And in that process, I asked the question, what next? And my creativity really began to blossom again. I found myself drawing and painting again. And then it was about 9 months later, and I just knew that the next step was stories. Stories, that's what just kept coming over and over again, working with stories. And I wasn't a storyteller. I started Storywell then, the name of my business. And I was using stories and narrative to inspire well-being. But I felt like a bit of a fraud, because I wasn't actually a story. I didn't feel like a storyteller. And that in itself was its own journey, because I hadn't really met my own storyteller. So I had to then, the next step was meeting and embracing the storyteller within me, which is a whole new process and journey that I undertook.
Well, as we're right there at that point, one of the things I definitely want to raise in this conversation is the idea of consciousness, not as in raising your consciousness, but as in what sort of consciousness are we talking about? So, for instance, I know that in shamanic journeying, you can't use ordinary everyday consciousness. You have to move into a state that's called shamanic consciousness. And in doing that, you know, your sense of location in your body changes and your brain wave rates change and, you know, all that stuff happens. So it's a very different experience. And my experience of good storytelling, and by that I mean basically what my own involvement, you know, is like, I remember, for those of you who are old enough, I remember going to see Dances with Wolves. And it's a 3-hour movie. I mean, it's a hugely epic, long movie. And we went in at 8 and we came out at 11. I was with my teenage sons and we just looked at one another and went, what time is it? 11? You know, there was that sense of having been outside of time and in a completely different state. So tell me what you have observed in storytelling with groups particularly.
Well, I think that in a way the briefest answer is probably just to say that we tap into the unconscious. Now, depending on your background, some people call that the subconscious. My background is Jungian, so I stick with the unconscious. And you know, the imagination is the bridge to the unconscious. So when we listen to a story or we are taken on a journey which via our imagination, then it allows us to travel, to journey deeply within our psyche. And that will be different for every individual with every story. I don't think it can be predicted what's going to happen. I don't think you necessarily know before you cross that threshold how far in you will go. Some people call it entering the heart space as well. So, you know, we go within, we go deep, and I think there are layers. People talk about, when they listen to a story, they talk about, you know, how they can almost feel the layers peeling away. And the story, because the brain loves story, and because storytelling is in our DNA and it's something that we've been doing as a collective, the human beings of this world have been telling stories since we could walk on two legs, and probably even before that in one shape or form. It's absolutely a part of our psyche. So it's deep. It goes deep. I don't think it matters too much what the labels are in terms of where and what aspect of ourselves do we journey to, but it goes to a place where we hold truths, where we meet truths, and where we can have a meaningful experience of ourselves in relation to other through the narrative.
Yes, which is very different. I just want to say this in case anyone's confused. Very different from that piece of yourself with which you do the grocery list and the to-do list. It's a very different place. So if we ask where that was, probably we would point to our heads and like tap ourselves ruefully on the heads. So yes, what lists there are in there. And then when we're listening, you know, it, like you said, the heart space is actually more where we are located in our physiognomy. You know, that the heart opens when story begins, I think.
I mean, I think the benefits of working with story and being a storyteller in the work that I do is that it's about relaxing people. It's about softening, relaxing and opening, because I think that as you say, much of the time we're in our thinking head, we're in our thinking functional doingness, and not so much in our beingness. And what I find when I go and tell a story is that people just immediately soften and begin to relax. And several times, in fact, I'm very surprised if in any group I'm telling in, someone doesn't fall asleep. People become so relaxed that they almost cross that threshold and walk parallel to the dream world through the story. So again, the whole being able to open and be relaxed allows us to take that journey more easily. As anyone who, you know, any of your listeners or anyone who's experienced guided visualization, sometimes people say that, you know, listening to a story, when you're telling a story, Alex, it's like being on a guided meditation. You know, people recognize the different state that they go into, even if they can't really articulate it. And after I've told a story, there is, you know, usually a period where sometimes it's of silence, sometimes I might play a little bit of music, but I always sort of say, you know, no one has to speak, just for a moment or two, a minute or two, let's just allow the story to settle and feel it rather than start to try and articulate or intellectualize what we've just listened to.
Yes, I think that's a very good idea. And from what we know about consciousness and listening, the whole notion that you're listening from somewhere else other than your doing brain means that whatever truths you're going to encounter in that heart space have direct access. You have direct access to them. They have direct access to you. There's a connection between the listener and the story through which some sort of living something passes in conversation, really, as if the listener was having a conversation with the story, which you are giving voice to.
And actually, even more than that, because of how the brain responds when we listen to the stories, the only other time when the whole brain ignites like a Christmas tree is when we're listening to music. And when we listen to a story being told, again, the brain lights up. Every aspect of the brain is working. Our memory system, our feelings, our senses, the primitive brain stem, everything is working. So as we listen to a story, we're drawing on experiences that we've had, memories that we've had. Some would say that we also draw upon the collective unconscious, you know, so you might even be experiencing things that you've never experienced in your own lifetime, but it could be something that you feel you've experienced in a previous lifetime. Or and again, one of the things that people often say after I've told a story, and especially if it's the first time that they're listening to me tell one, is they feel like they're there. They feel like they're in the story. They feel like they're experiencing it. They can smell the wood smoke. They can feel the sting of the rain on their skin. They can feel the joyful anticipation or the clenching fear. And it's not necessarily, sometimes I ask, you know, is there one perspective of the story that you're particularly drawn to? Afterwards, I might ask that question. And again, invariably, the answer is they're in it all. They're experiencing the whole thing.
Yes.
And it reminds, I mean, I don't know much about dreaming and interpreting dreams, but what I do understand is that when we dream, every aspect of the dream is a reflection of ourselves. And it sounds to me like a similar thing is happening when people are experiencing the story, because they experience it all from within, not just one view of the story.
Yes.
You know, not just following the hero or the heroine's journey, but experiencing it from every viewpoint.
Yes, it's almost as if we go into listening, saying to the story, show me myself. And of course the story does. It shows you, so you are the hero, You are maybe the villain. You might be the surrounding mountains. You might be the river. You might be the forest, you know, and you're probably all of them, like you say, just as in Jungian dream interpretation, which I love because of that business of all of it being an aspect of myself. You know, I come out of something like that, not having the language for it, but now looking back from this conversation to the Dances with Wolves experience, for instance, because I think that's one that a lot of us share, of going, I didn't know I was that big, or I didn't know I was connected to all of that. You know, real sense of wonder at having met myself in a place where I didn't expect to. You know, I'm a city girl. I would not expect to meet myself in a buffalo herd, you know, running, being hunted and chased by Kevin Costner. You know, as pleasant a thought as that is at the age that he was when he made Dances with Wolves. You just don't, you know, that is not a place I would expect to meet myself, because that's not who I have previously experienced myself to be. But now, having come out of that, I have experienced myself as a much larger and richer and more connected person. And yeah. I came out of that not having that language at all, but I still had the experience. Yeah.
Well, I think this is the wonderful thing about stories and storytelling through whatever form, whether it's the form of, you know, going to see a movie or listening to a play on the radio or reading a book, whatever it is, that the metaphor is a vehicle, is a container for so much. And we don't come out of these experiences necessarily unless we're focused on peeling back the layers and exploring that experience a little bit more, like we are in this conversation. We enjoy the story a lot more often than not for what it is.
Yes.
And for how we feel it afterwards, and then any stimulation or conversation, etc., that might happen. And again, this is what's so powerful about storytelling, because it's like the story meets the individual wherever they're at. And it could be that, you know, it's just light recreational activity. Mm-hmm. I'm going to the movies, or I'm going to go and listen to some storytellers around a fire, or go to a festival, or whatever it might be. And yet, even without us having that conversation afterwards, and more often than not, I have to say, there isn't necessarily a deep and meaningful conversation that takes place afterwards. And I think that's partly due to the fact that people are still returning from the story landscape. But I also think that it's because people haven't found the language yet to articulate the experience, or necessarily even have the cognitive, conscious thinking awareness to be able to articulate what the story means for them. And it might be that in 6 months' time or a year's time, suddenly an image or a part of that story suddenly will, they'll suddenly remember it in a context which, you know, you wouldn't necessarily expect. And it's like a little piece of the jigsaw fits into place. Mm-hmm. And this is what is so wonderful about story and working with metaphor. And it was another really lovely thing about the Sesame Method when I trained, was everything was about working with the oblique. Nothing was about talking necessarily directly about the human experience or the trauma or the crisis in terms of therapeutic work. It was about allowing the imagination to guide us to what medicine we need to take for ourselves to allow that transformation to take place. And I trust the stories that I work with, particularly because I work with the old stories, implicitly knowing that even when I've walked out of that place where I've told the story, I just know that the story is still weaving its magic, and it's becoming the person's own story more and more as they step out into the world. And it's amazing.
Yes, because they have their own relationship with it now. You know, you've actually given them a very valuable thing, you know, that relationship with that story. not just with story, but with that story and the container that it is for them, inside of which they can meet themselves and they can take a different look at, you know, whatever it is that's troubling them or whatever, you know, spirit of the heart they've carried with them or whatever it is. Definitely.
And I mean, and a lot of people are talking now, in recent years they've been talking about, and I remember since the Olympics came to the UK, suddenly narrative and storytelling has become quite a sort of buzz feature, which I got quite excited about. Not that it's necessarily gone the way I thought it would. But one of the things that I see and hear other people recognise about story is that a story allows people to remember an event long after they've forgotten what the event is in itself.
Yes.
So they'll remember someone's story from an event, or, you know, it could be a personal anecdotal story or the story of a business, or it could be more of a traditional story like the ones that I tell. But often the individuals remember the story much more than the actual event that where the story was being told. And I think that says something as well about it reaching into different levels of our consciousness.
I think we do live in narrative, and I was thinking back to that point in your life that you were describing where you were saying that that was just, you just had to step into the void. And I know that right now Charles Eisenstein is calling that the space between stories. When one story is finished and before the next story begins, you're in that space going, who do I be? Because we define ourselves by our own personal story and our own personal narrative. When it abruptly comes to an end, which can be quite unnerving, you know, then you have that space where you have to ask, okay, what next? You know, and if you are a normal driven Westerner, then you'll have to come up with a 5-year plan and you'll have to do this, that, and the other. You know, if you are an intuitive person, like I suspect most of the audience is, then hopefully you've got the trust in yourself and in, you know, and in the power of our own human ability to spin story. And I don't mean that in a negative sense at all, but to spin out our story just like a silkworm spins silk. Then you can just pause and rest in that.
And to trust that pause. I mean, there's a great drive at the moment towards Kundalini yoga. And again, similar to what you were just saying about, you know, that pause as one aspect of our story comes to a close and before we take the next step into the next one. The same thing in Kundalini yoga, you know, you're asked to focus on that pause between the breath, between the exhalation coming to an end and the in-breath. And actually it's that space. And in recent years, in some of the writing and poetry that I've written, I really found myself exploring this space between this, I mean, and the work that thresholds have in our life. Mm-hmm. And for me, thresholds are just like, I love thresholds and I love through story and through sound. You know, being able to take that journey across thresholds into different realms, like you did at the beginning with your bells. You know, you were able to not only evoke the spirits of the different realms, but you also allowed us to journey beyond ourselves.
Yes.
As a starting point for this conversation. So that those spaces in between are crucial. And if we're able to just breathe and relax in those spaces and not fill them with too much doingness, then we experience ourselves more deeply.
We do. And I think we're coming to a time where people are much more willing to do that. When I was growing up, you were really taught not to, you know, because that was daydreaming and it was a waste of time. And in fact, what it was dropping deeply into the arms of whatever reality is, you know, whatever reality human beings actually inhabit below the neck, you know, and I don't just mean bodily, I mean consciously below the neck as well, you know, out of the head, what reality are we in? So that's a thing that I think that resting back into it is a thing that is easier for humans now than it has been over the past maybe a century. You know, we've really been quite driven and not allowed the relaxing into that. And the relaxing is really important. So tell me about, because you said this, and I think it's really important that encircling, encompassing container that story ends up being, not, I think you said, not just for the individual, but also if you're telling in a group, for the group, would that be accurate?
The story becomes, the story lives in its own right when you're telling it. The listener, I think this, I don't know if this is answering your question or not, but the act of listening to a story, which allows us to cross that threshold, through the active imagination, through drawing on our memories and our experiences, as we listen to the story and having this experience where people say, I was in it, it was real, I could feel, I could hear the snow, I could feel the crunch of the snow under my boots. And I felt, I remember one time someone saying, I was physically cold, shivering, as you told the story. It was a snowy story. And I think that it's particularly strong in a group situation with a group dynamic, because you've got all these different experiences going on, all these different brains activating. And as the story progresses, and I love working and building silence into story where possible as well, because the story, as you say, is the container. So it's easier to bring silence into the story. It feels safe and it feels nourishing, and it allows people to even more fully experience the story if they're given stretches of silence where they can just flesh that out for themselves. But by the time the story comes to an end, there is something there's something magical that happens. And it's the presence of the story, if you like. It's an atmosphere that is difficult to break with spoken word. And certainly you don't, I never want applause, because applause sort of shatters that feeling. But it's like it's just envelops everybody, it holds everybody, and it's very much a shared experience, whilst at the same time everyone in the circle has had their own unique individual experience. There is this really strong, united, common experience, a group experience. And I think it's difficult to define what it is, but I think it's the story, and it's the story and all the energies that have been evoked through the story. And we were talking earlier about, you know, not necessarily using the word archetypes, which is again another Jungian term, but it's the ancestors. You know, the stories I tell are the old traditional stories that have been handed down for hundreds, if not sometimes thousands of years. And it's not just the beings that live in the stories themselves, but it's all the voices that have shared and told those stories through the ages and generations as well. And if you're working, if I'm working a particularly old story, like a myth, you know, the oldest stories that there are, myths talking about how the world was created and the beings, the gods and the goddesses, from different traditions, then in the school of storytelling that I've come from, you know, we call upon the ancestors to help us and to stand behind us as we tell the story, to be aware of the, we call it the backspace, you know. And often if I'm telling a myth and I set the intention at the beginning of the story to, you know, to ask for the help of the ancestors. You know, I feel it. I feel my spine prickle, you know, beforehand, just through acknowledging that space and what it is. But again, these stories are so true and so real, even in today's modern busyness, that these myths and these legends and the old stories still have a place, very much a place, I think.
I think so too, and I just, as an aside, have this picture of you telling, you know, with people in a circle, and around the circle, the unseen circle of ancestors, you know, looking in, and with compassion, and with goodwill,
and with smiles,
and enjoying the story, and enjoying what bubbles up in people.
Yeah.
You know, because, and then more back on track, because what is true, and what I keep, I'm a mental problem solver in the sense that I look at difficulties, and the world is just fraught with difficulties right now, and I think, I have all my life thought, well, we can solve this, and then I would come up against the fact that we are people, we are human beings, and unless that shifts, then some of these problems are going to always be there. Is kind of part of the curriculum of this school, which doesn't mean I give up and go away. But I think that the myths and the old stories remain relevant because we are human beings and we will always be human beings. And so whatever it is that myth has to show us and has to teach us will adjust itself to the modern world, but it doesn't have to adjust itself to any kind of different human being because we're human beings, you know.
Absolutely.
And they came up out of our shared consciousness.
Yeah, and I mean, these stories speak about every aspect of the human condition. So it doesn't matter whether we're living in the 21st century, the 15th century, the 3rd century, or five centuries BC. It's all relevant. And I mean, I think, you know, in relation to how can stories serve the world in today's life, and given the challenges that we face, I'm a great believer that, you know, what we focus on is, in effect, what will become. There's an old Native American story about, you know, the knowledge that we create our own reality, and I believe that we do create our own reality, which is why I think it's so important that we get a little bit more of a handle of what our minds and our brains can allow us to do. Because I think when we experience a story, we can take a journey into a realm where anything can become possible. And it allows us to stretch and flex the imagination and to dream about the sort of world that we want, not only for ourselves, but for the earth, for our children, and for the future. But by dwelling upon the story that is playing out on the TV or on the radio waves or whatever, all we're doing is we're perpetuating that negative story. And actually, we need to be dreaming up and occupying the space that allows us to think about what we want for our world rather than pushing against what we don't want, which I think is so. I mean, that's just a personal view that I'm expressing there. But again, story and working through the imagination and working particularly with stories which inspire a sense of connection and engagement and that inspires well-being is healing on so many levels.
Yes, it is. And I was thinking as you were saying that we so often listen to that, you know, what you resist persists and therefore think on these things and go, oh, well, that's just, you know, airy-fairy. But then I was listening to the rest of what you said, and you're working very hard with a great deal of intention to get people to dream and to focus on that which heals and to actually do the real human work. Because what we know now, and I think probably listeners would agree, is that if you are going to change anything, you have got to start with yourself. You must really, truly transform yourself, which may mean walking into the most frightening thing, like the void between stories, you know, that, and going ahead and walking into it and focusing on the thing, not what's screaming for your attention, which is on the news, which, by the way, may or may not be accurate, that story that we hear. You know, I mean, I have actually caught some recently from reputable stations where we now know that actually that wasn't what happened. So there is real value in taking your intention and focusing on what it is that you wish to create and doing it. You know, that's a genuine, there's a real place to get a lever under reality here kind of approach.
And doing it mindfully.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, some people really balk at this sort of knowledge or this possibility, because what it means is that we have to take responsibility. Mm. You know, it's easy to just hand over the responsibility to the state or to the world or to the powers that be. But actually, you know, for anyone who's journeyed and done this, some of this work, we have an inkling of our own power that we hold, not in an egocentric way, but just by birthright, because our bodies are our home, but we are spirit. We inhabit it in a way, and if we, you see, we're stepping into a realm now where things become so difficult to articulate, but we have to take more responsibility, and that means being mindful about what we're thinking about. And if we get caught in the negative loop, then it's really important that we recognize it and pull ourselves out of it in the easiest way possible. And sometimes the easiest way to do that is to think, okay, so I'm thinking about something now which I don't want in my life or for the world. Let me just switch that to thinking now about, well, what do I want? Because when we're exposed to so much contrast, then rather than focusing on the contrast, it gives us an opportunity to actually think, well, what do we want for the world? We want children to have full bellies and to be secure and to be safe and for communities to live in harmony and for people to coexist on this planet in a sustainable way and in a respectful, loving way. And the ancients knew this, our ancestors knew this, because this knowledge is what's in the stories time and time again. You know, there'll be a tree spirit or a being that steps forward from nature that has the wisdom to help the heroine move forward in their lives, to integrate whatever knowledge it is that allows the transformation to take place. So it's the same thing with our own lives, as you said at the beginning. You know, it's about that personal journey and what it means to us.
And it's an interesting thing that you talk about thresholds and then about being caught in that negative cycle, because I was just thinking right at that moment, what could I do to break that just instantly? Because I'm practiced at it now, but I haven't always been, and it was difficult, you know, but you and I now know some things about thresholds. Like when you begin a story, the classic thing that we all do when we tell our children a story is to say, once upon a time in a land far away. There's nothing wrong with taking 5 seconds and saying, once upon a time in a land far away, there was a 6-year-old girl named Laurie who loved to dress up as a cowboy. Boom! The negative cycle is gone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that just takes me to a different place.
Yeah.
And then I can choose where to go. Or I may want to pick up the bells and just go,
yeah,
you know, threshold.
Yeah.
Make myself a threshold.
Yeah.
And step out.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Because we can create these thresholds for ourselves whenever, you know, we need to pass from one realm into another. And the realm that we exist in much of the time, where we're bombarded with energies which aren't necessarily helpful to us, it's important that we have techniques and tools at our hands. And
And I think that that's really down again to the individual. Some people might say, well, what's the right tool? What's the right technique? And it's different for everyone. Some people, it might be just take off your shoes and socks and go and walk in a circle barefoot on the ground and just really ground yourself and connect, you know, and breathe. Some people, it is just as simple as breathing. Someone else, it might be cooking a meal, stepping into a creative process. I remember when I was young, you know, I had a bit of a predisposition to feeling quite depressed and, you know, having quite a negative thinking cycle. And often, you know, those around me would sort of say, look, you know, do something, you know, move.
Yes.
And there were times when I was so in the movement aspect of my therapeutic training, the Laban term would be bound flow, when someone was almost in a sort of embryonic state, hunched over and completely closed and numb to the world. And I'm sure we've all know what that experience is like. And one of the hardest things to do is to actually, whether it's through stubbornness or pride or just whatever it is, I'm in this state and I'm not budging. But actually, as soon as we move, as soon as we allow ourselves just to, and it feels terrifying in the moment. It feels, you know, what's going to happen if I come from this place of being closed and encircled within my own darkness? If I step out of, if I take the energy outwards, what's going to happen? But it is, that's the threshold. And going for a walk, doing something different, anything will break it. And all of these things, yeah, as you say, are thresholds. And I love the once upon a time thing because it just allows us to enter that world of, you know, so long as we don't go down horror movies.
Yes, exactly.
Once upon a time, there was a dark lord.
Don't take that path.
Do it mindfully, you know. Again, it's that, what do we want to create? Yeah, the darkness is there. The light is there. We need both bouncing off each other because that's what drives everything forward.
Yes. Yeah, you can make up fabulous stories anyway. But all it takes is that, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 seconds, because it's the once upon a time that I can feel my body shift. You know, I can actually feel things change because, you know, your brain knows it can kind of go to sleep now because you're going to be listening with your heart. You know, you're going to be listening down here someplace, not up in the grocery list, but down in the heart.
And the beginning is, you know, again, going back to the storyteller's craft, it's one of the things that, you know, I've certainly learned. And we kind of know it instinctively because we know it when we hear it, as you've said. You know, so clearly, Laurie, you know, that once upon a time, once a long, long time ago, or in a galaxy far, far away, we know them. And it's what allows us to drop into that space. It's a, and it's a signal to the brain, which is, okay, I know what this is. It's an instant recognition that allows us then to sit back, close our eyes and take that journey with the storyteller.
Yeah.
Which I think is always, you know, I'm always honoured by people who just sort of, I mean, I always sort of, my tagline is inspiring well-being, so I sort of think that sort of speaks for itself. But any storyteller, you don't know where you're going to be taken, the storyteller. So it's a real trust.
Definitely. I'm going to take a deep breath there and sadly bring this conversation nearly to a close, quite.
So quickly.
So
we can talk for hours.
Yes, we're going to talk about where you can find Alex in just a moment. First, I'm going to say thank you to the spirits of the East and of the South and of the West and of the North, our ancestors, and of above, and of our Mother, the Earth, in whose arms we rest. And thanks to Alex for being here. And now she's going to tell us what she's doing now and where we can find her.
Oh, thanks, Laurie. So basically my website is StoryWell, story-well, www.story-well.co.uk or .com. And one of the things that I'm doing at the moment with my work is I have stories always available online at my website for free, stories that are live recordings, perfectly imperfect, as I say. And so for anyone who's interested in hearing some of these stories, then you can go to my website and to the recordings tab and sign up to a newsletter. That way you will get notification on when new stories are uploaded, because it's just three at a time. Each season they change. And get in touch with me if you're interested about storytelling and how it can help to heal and transform on a personal level, or if you're working with groups or in a team. I also work with healing sound with the gongs, so seeing storytelling as a part of that. But yeah, it's been a real, real pleasure to be here and to have this conversation, Laurie. Thank you. And thank you to all the spirits of the east and south and west and north and above and the earth. And I just feel like we've been very held today, so it's been a real treat. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for joining us. And I hope you take away with you the sense of story unfolding.